Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and ridiculous debates that don't frickin' mean anything, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go frickin' nuts. My very special guest, who's hard-hitting in your face, as serious as a nosebleed, and is Christopher Breen from the Greenway Radio
Show. I always love that description. Vinny, I gotta ask, who's the band, man? They're pretty good. I kind of like them.
They're called Clap Clap Riot. They tried calling themselves Chlamydia Riot, but it didn't work.
Interesting. Clap Clap Riot. Any affiliation with Pussy Riot?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the Pussy Riot could have a show with Clap Clap Riot, and that could be the Clap Pussy Riot? Or the Pussy with the Clap Riot? I think we're going a little bit past the FCC regulations. Sorry,
FCC. FCC. Who's the FCC, Vinny? I don't even know. They still regulated things anymore. I mean, this is the internet, baby.
I mean, I can think of three cuss words that start with F, C, and C, but But ironically, we can't say them because of the FCC. So I just wanted to, in occasions like this, I just wanted to, you know, put a little message in there to the government regulating officers who decide to curtail free speech in every sense of the word, because apparently people can't be adults about language and interpret it for what it really means, and that kind of thing, and just get overly offended and just, you know, oh, well, I don't want other people to say things that offend me. Well, look, if it offends you, you stop listening, and that person winds up having no listeners. Okay, it's a self-regulating system that we have. I think what should be censored is lies, manipulation, and BS debates. Like, frankly, if I was in charge of the mainstream media, I would have actually censored the Romney-Obama debate, and I would have instead covered the alternative third-party debate, which is happening with the Green Party, the Constitutional Party, and the Libertarian Party, and I think one more as well. I would have covered that debate in full on C-SPAN and all of that kind of stuff, and I would have relegated the Romney-Obama debate as the irrelevant one that's, you know, just kind of kept on the internet sort of thing, just raw, not really many highlights or anything like that. You don't really want people to pay attention to it because it's just not important.
Okay, so Vinny, this is a little moving in a different direction, but I'm just noticing this. I don't know if you heard about this, but Donald Trump said yesterday, the day prior, or the past few days, he's going to have breaking information, something that's going to shock and awe, and something specific to do with President Obama. It looks like they just released it, or at least we're getting kind of a pre-release. I'm reading this from Mail Online. It says Donald Trump to reveal divorce papers of Michelle and Barack Obama, claims respected financial pundit. Donald Trump is to claim that he has unearthed divorce papers of Michelle Obama and the president, according to a respected financial pundit who links to the tycoon. It is alleged that the eccentric real estate mogul will claim that the documents show the first lady and the president were at one point in their 2 decades of marriage seriously considering splitting up. Trump set the hair running on Monday by claiming that he was set to make an announcement on Wednesday that would be bordering on gigantic and that it could possibly and would possibly change the presidential race.
The billionaire told Fox and Friends that he had something very, very big concerning the president of the United States. It's going to be very big. I know one thing, you will cover it in a very big fashion. I just love the overusage of the words very big. It's like Donald Trump's got the uber vocabulary there. Trump declined to elaborate. Hey, this is a good idea. You don't elaborate to the media. You actually release it on your own terms through in your own way, all simultaneously. That way it's got the impact and it can't be changed or chopped or spun right in the moment. It'll get chopped and changed and spun afterwards anyway. But today, an investor who appears on the same business talk show as him claims to have more details. Douglas Cass, a Florida-based investor who appears on CNBC's talk show Squawk Box, where Trump is often a commentator, tweeted to his 48,000 followers, quote, high above the Alps, my gnome has heard that Donald Trump will announce that he has unearthed divorce papers between the Prez and his wife.
So what do you think about this, Vinny? Because, okay, as much as I would have, could have and would have hoped for something, you know, really damning maybe to come out on Obama, is this not nonsense? I mean, I don't know. This doesn't really seem like news. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what is this supposed to play the family values card or something, but what is significance
here? You're looking at the same article I am, and you'll notice down the left it's this Mail Online with Donald Trump to reveal divorce papers of Obama, and down the left, down the right-hand side, Female Today, and it's like Daniel Craig looks shaken and stirred, Halle Berry photographed with a shark in a tank, and all of this other kind of stuff. So, you know what? I think it's basically the same side of the same tabloid type of crapola, full of meaningless crap that doesn't really matter. I mean, who cares if Obama and his wife are really divorced? It doesn't change the fact that he's still the president. It doesn't change the fact that he's a scumbag, and it doesn't change the fact that he's a bald-faced liar. What consequence is this really going to have? The other side of it is, the very deep kind of incense and inflamement that perhaps some Americans might have in the Bible Belt, or perhaps, about having a president that ain't married, or is married under false pretenses or something. I don't know. Because what was her name? Monica Lewinsky, you know, when he denied that he had all that sexual involvement and whatever is used to lambast him and demonize him, and it went way out of control, again, over a relatively insignificant issue. So you never know which way this might swing. It means nothing to us, because it didn't change the fact that Bill Clinton was a scumbag who sold out the United States to NAFTA and GATT, right?
Yeah, and that's what's – because, you know, this to me is nonsense. I mean, this isn't even really relevant. I guess parts of it are interesting. I mean, it says this is referring to the book The Amateur. I don't know if you've read this, Benny. It's been on my kind of to-do list. But it says that the book claims that their marriage in its 8th year at the time was on the rocks with Mr. Obama, because we know that, and was so depressed that some of his friends believe that the president may be suicidal. I actually didn't know that. I don't know if that's true. That's what the book claims. But I guess that shows you kind of the ridiculous nature of our society and this idea of what is presidential and who a president should be. Because think about it, you literally couldn't be single and run for the president of the United States, because you wouldn't have the family values card that you can play. So you really couldn't be single. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know, has there been a single president where that is rightfully ran and won? I don't think so.
Well, you can't. I don't think. And if you turn out to be the right kind of president after getting elected, like let's say Woodrow Wilson, who signed in the legislation for the Fed, he later wrote that he was a most unhappy man, that he's basically destroyed and sold out the country to a ruthless criminal banking elite, and he's destroyed the country unwittingly forever. JFK very soon before he was shot and killed. Signed two presidential directives, Presidential Directive 11110 and 11111. Firstly, abolishing the Federal Reserve and issuing new redback currency. And there actually is currency of this nature floating around in some people's wallets. They see them and it's like, oh my God, this is a JFK issuance note. Awesome. And then also the other one was to abolish the CIA. Popped. And then, so you either regret it or you try and change it in the moment and you get taken out. Eisenhower regretted it as well. He warned about the disastrous rise of misplaced power with a sort of unset by the military-industrial complex. You have presidential candidates like Bobby Kennedy being shot by Sirhan Sirhan, allegedly, and being shot with more bullets than Sirhan Sirhan's gun actually held, and with the wrong kind of bullets as well. You have, and that was, I think, the last, the only presidents that I can think of who either regretted later or were assassinated before they could do a whole bunch.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of this, you know, breaking news, which really isn't breaking, that Donald Trump is supposedly revealing on, you know, Obama's marriage has been a rocky one. It's not even that they've been divorced. It's that it was a rocky marriage on the verge of divorce.
Yeah, it's BS anyway, bro, because what's his name? Trump is endorsing Romney.
Well, what I was going to say, though, too, I mean, this is coming, the liberals are going to have a field day with this. I mean, this is coming from a guy that's had three wives. And I would probably say anyone married for longer than five years nowadays. I mean, people get divorced left and right, but anybody that's been married 20, 30 years or whatever it is, I'll tell you, they've probably had their moments they've considered a divorce. I don't know. This just seems like total nonsense coming from a nonsensical guy with a really bad fake hairpiece.
Yeah. Well, I've got this twist in my stomach every time I watch a presidential debate, Chris, that these people are just lying, and I cannot stand it. I've got to switch it off. I've got to go out and do something, because sitting here listening to these pieces of trash lie to the American people, lie to me, maybe even lie to themselves, I've got better things to do with my life. And I'm starting to think about boycotting elections just in general and refusing to cover them. But if you do, everybody just still wants to hear what the election's going on. You know, oh my God, Romney said this and Obama said that. Like, the truth movement loves to hear the presidential debates, not because they think that they're real, but because they hate them so much and it fuels so much anger and aggression and against how, well, basically it's a false show. And yeah. So basically, let's the truth movement turns, this is the irony, the truth movement turns a false show into a bigger show where they expose the falsehoods, and then everybody gets depressed and ain't got nobody really to vote for or nothing really to hope for. So why don't we just boycott it altogether?
Well, I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people are, you know, boycotting the vote as well. But let's segue into... we're talking here about Trump, but what are the real important issues, Vinny? And we know what they are. I'm kind of asking a rhetorical question, but think about this. Through all these debates, three presidential debates and a vice presidential debate, they didn't mention the Federal Reserve or Ben Bernanke once. Not once. Think about that. That's probably one of the biggest topics of discussion on everybody's mind that would have real value, you know, to bring this out into the public debate. Totally ignored. In fact, the only thing we got out of it was really a propaganda hit, which I'm sure you covered, which I, you know, it came out was an FBI planted terrorist plot where they provided, you know, Muhammad, I can't pronounce the rest of his name, you know, so typical, you know, crafted as usual. You know, to blow up a New York, you know, Federal Reserve building. That's the only headline we got, is it, you know.
crazy. Anybody who is against the Fed is a crazy terrorist, in other words. And when my girlfriend came through the door, I didn't even hear about that story until my girlfriend told me about it. She was listening to it on the radio in her car on her way to work and stuff. And she comes in and goes, "Hey, Vinny, did you hear that there was a truck bomb outside the Fed?" And I go, "Oh, don't worry about it, baby. It's probably just the FBI."
That is not far from the truth. I mean, half the time, dude, we're just sitting around just going, "Well, is this it? It's the FBI again. Hey, how you doing?"
I mean, you know, and I had to research into it to confirm it first. But the thing is, it's like, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it must be a rhinoceros.
Makes a lot of sense, that's for sure.
Yeah. and that's the interesting thing I've found about watching the news now is that you know how the ignorant public operates on a lot of assumptions, right?
I would say we operate on assumptions pretty much entirely, almost. Learned behavior.
And when you become a conspiracy theorist, you have a new set of learned behavior and a new set of bias and a new set of stuff that you ignore and a new set of stuff that you listen to. And you operate under basically the same but opposite assumptions. And the thing is, instead of being wrong 90% of the time with the mainstream assumptions, you're correct 90% of the time. But it doesn't mean you're correct 100%. And it means you still have to do a little bit of research and a little bit of digging. And most of the time, only a modicum of information gathering will confirm whether or not a story is true or false in the alleged conspiracy that you've kind of instantly cocked up in your head, you know. We've got a caller now. Elizabeth, I'm sorry, we won't be taking that call just now. We should probably take it after the break. And I just want to kind of break something down for people as well. False flag terrorism is virtually the only type of terrorism that exists, okay? Every time you see something like the Mur building or 9/11 or the First World Trade Center attacked or Waco, Texas or anything else that you can ever think of where a huge disaster has been declared and everything like that, it's virtually always the government hand on it, steering it, funding it, massaging its temples when it gets you know, a little bit of a headache from all the people exposing its particular strain of scumbaggery. It's almost always them. Okay, so whenever you see terrorism, and if it's repeated, if there are keywords that are used over and over again, you can be assured that it's a hit piece kind of thing and a total propaganda malnourishment of the mind. Okay, regime. I will say the word regime 15 times in the next 15 seconds. Regime, 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 regime.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, "I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning." But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We go brush our teeth. That's all part of it. That's foreplay. You go sort out the recycling. That's not part of it, but it's still very important. Next thing you know, we're in the bedroom. You're wearing that ugly, baggy t-shirt from that team-building exercise you did for your old work. And it's never looked better on you. Oh, wah, 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 wah. I take off my trousers and trip over them, but I turn it into a little dance that makes you think, yum, he's very sexy. Now I'm down to just my socks. And you know, when I'm down to just my socks, what time it is. It's time for business. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
You know when I'm wearing my socks, it's business time. They're business socks.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back.
Making love. Making love for. Making love for two.
Making life and love for two. Making love for 2 minutes. You only need 2 minutes because I'm so intense. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. the deadly serious comedy program. And I was thinking of it, deadly serious comedy. Isn't that even funnier when you think about it like that? Is like you can't make this stuff up, right? Dig this, Chris. I've got an article here for you that I think Americans will appreciate before we go to Elizabeth, our fabulous caller. McDonald's manager kicked customer in head. A McDonald's manager has been sentenced to 7 months home detention for a quote-unquote football kick to the head of a customer. And Rishi Kumar, 34, a duty manager at a fast food restaurant, was convicted in Queenstown District Court yesterday of intent to injure, causing injury to a customer on August 30 when he punched the victim, swung him around, threw him to the ground, stood on his torso, and finally kicked him in the head. You ever think about anybody with in McDonald's with a power complex? Here's the prime example.
Yeah, I think that manager will be losing their benefits, that's for sure. I don't know if that's a rousing endorsement for, what was it, McDonald's, you said? Is that McDonald's?
No, never mind. McDonald's. It's like a football kick to the head. It's so good. I'm loving it. Yeah, like Michael Tyson. I now, Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen, and I'm glad you're having fun. And I always say, laugh right in the face of these fools. Anyway, to the point. Vincent, I know your times are different, but actually this third-party debate is tonight. And unless I've hit a time loop, it's October 23rd. It's hosted by Free and Equal Elections Foundation. I've tried to let all my friends know. All you have to do is go to freeandequal.org, and you'll get all the information. I just feel that if, 10,000 of us stream it, or maybe a million or 10 million, it kind of pokes a stick at what we are told is our choices. Anyway, so they're going to have all the candidates, Rocky Anderson and, let's see what parties he would, Gary Johnson, Libertarian, Jill Stein, Green, Virgil Good, and the Justice. They're going to have four candidates. It said they invited six, and I'm guessing that was in, Merlin Miller and maybe Roseanne, I'm not sure, but OR TV is carrying it. Rush Today is being held in Chicago, so anybody close to Chicagoland, it's at the Hilton, and you can watch it live stream.
Yeah, and I'm looking at that. So that's freeandequal.org. Larry King is to moderate the third-party presidential debate. So yeah, thank you for reminding us, and I guess so. It'll be live streamed by a few different networks. I think Russia Today is one of them. You mentioned that as well. And then is it on the
Larry King? Yeah. Larry King is actually going to be the moderator. You can go to Hulu.com, HULU.com. They'll be streaming it too. And Aura TV, that's ORA TV. So yeah, Google that up, ladies and gentlemen, and watch the debates. And I found, I've been to so many election debates of minor candidates and major candidates and things like that, guys, too many to count. And I've filmed them and pulled them all up on YouTube. And you notice the exact same thing. When I'm looking at the debate and I see the mainstream candidates come up against the alternative candidates with their facts and figures, they get beaten down every time. However, watching the exact same debate with people who are already deciding to vote for one of the two mainstream candidates, they just jeer and laugh and be disruptive to all those other people who put their point of views across. to the point in which I've thought that there should be two debates. There should be the mainstream candidate debate for the people who just are retarded, and the minor party debates for those people who actually give a frack.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I actually tuned into Aura TV. I've actually never heard of them, but yeah, I'm checking it out. So I guess they're going to be streaming it there tonight, but it just kind of gives you an indication, Vinny. I mean, I'm looking at the Aura TV network, 2,400 subscribers. So we've got Aura TV. It's one of the main syndicates. And I mean, there's really no audience. I mean, sadly, I wish there was more.
Exactly. And that's was kind of my point, Chris, is that the people who care are actually a very small minority who are willing to listen to all the sides, because the truth in itself, I find, is very simple, and it only captures a very small amount of people who are able to see how simple it is. And in general, people will always pick the lie to listen to, because that's what makes them comfortable. That's what they're familiar with. It's all they know.
Well, people believe what they want to believe, and what is comfortable to them. So it's, I'm looking here too. I'm reading, I don't know if you saw this, Vinny, earlier, but major airports supposedly to remove naked body scanners. This is kind of the first I've heard of this. This is the Transportation Security Administration is removing full body X-ray scanners from major U.S. airports and shipping them to less busy locations. I'm not sure what that means. For some reason, I have a hard time believing any of this, but.
Well, this presidential debate in and of itself starts in about 90 minutes, folks. If you're listening live, it starts in 90 minutes at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right when the show finishes. And so it's moderated by Larry King. The speakers are Virgil Good from the Constitution Party, Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party, Jill Stein from the Green Party, and Rocky Anderson from the Justice Party. These are the four presidential candidates of the alternative stream. And it's interesting, with America being a country of how many hundred million? 300 plus? You've only got like 312 million, and you've only got four people from the alternative parties who can actually show up at those particular places. And I put this down to, mate, when you're in a minor party, traveling to a particular location actually really does come into whether or not you can appear places.
Yeah.
This is why I think the media should be a lot more accommodating and bring on candidates via video conference and Skype, because what it does, it enables people to have real presidential debates without any cost to their campaigns, right?
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is, we don't need to ask, you know, the mainstream media for, we just need to focus more on action and doing, but, you know, I'd really like to see better syndication of these types of events. And that's something even like, you know, that's even something I would like to focus on over the next year or so is, you know, it'd be great to get some real broadcasting to cover these types of events. Clearly, the American people really aren't getting access to it. And I don't think, so this is not even being broadcasted on any major television station, or is it? I'm not even sure.
Nobody's even discussed it.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. I mean, we're in this 24/7. I've barely heard about it. And all we do is read through on thumb. Honestly, though. I mean, obviously, I knew there was a debate, but it's that non-publicized.
Yeah. Well, I always found that the most important things will be construed as the least important in the background things, and the least important things will be pushed into the foreground to distract you from the other things.
I did my part today. I fired out emails to, let's just say, a number of online alternative sites. Actually tried to call in to one who has a large audience and couldn't get through. I saw this yesterday on Veterans Today, so I'm not exactly sure whether it was the public information folks for these candidates. I'm not sure why nobody knew about this or nobody knows. I worked diligently, tried to spread one little word,
It's called a fracking media blackout. If the mainstream media doesn't cover it, the alternative media often doesn't get wind of it either, because what the alternative media is now doing is they've turned into a reprocessing machine. You know how you come off the line with a really terrible product, and you've got some dude at the end of the line that just fixes all the crap that the guys before him on the assembly line missed? That's what a lot of the alternative media is. They're not actually going out there and producing new results and everything like that. They're simply taking in the mainstream media, reworking it, having a look, changing the article title and that sort of thing, and perhaps adding in a few little extra bits of information. But if the big information, like such as a presidential debate in a country like America that has been so disenfranchised by the enormous disparity between real debate and showtime debate between the main presidential candidates who don't do anything, you've got like, what, a 30% vote turnout? Tops? No wonder. So why isn't 70% of the voting public suddenly interested in going, you know what, I want an alternative and I want somebody who's actually going to be telling me a new side that I haven't already heard before? Because have you noticed that every single president for every single party campaigns on the exact same things and uses the exact same words even? Did you know that John Key, coming into New Zealand politics, campaigned on a platform of change in 2008? Sound familiar?
Yeah, and we need to the alternative media needs to focus on, you know, and the infrastructure that's being built that we're all part of, on breaking more relevant news. I mean, there's a time and place for talk radio, and obviously we do talk radio and talk video, whatever you want to call it. But I'd really like to see that change. And, you know, I think we should all hold ourselves accountable to that, myself included, as I'd like to see what we do break more real news, which I think has an even bigger impact. You know, we've seen that with leaders within the movement, people like Andrew Breitbart, who I know wasn't your traditional, I don't even know how you describe Andrew Breitbart at times, but, you know, he had a tendency of breaking some major stories. And, you know, I'd like to see more of that. What are your thoughts about that, Vinny?
Well, I think it's about kind of keeping your ear to sources, because often the humanity kind of reacts to a threat as a global society, much like a cactus does. And I've said this many times, that it doesn't matter what the conspiracy is. It doesn't matter what area it's being implemented. I can almost guarantee you that within that particular area that's being affected by that particular conspiracy, there'll be one particular individual who'll be willing to talk about it, or one who's already been campaigning on it for a number of years. You just go and find those people. They'll be waving placards, they'll be holding megaphones and stuff like that at the protests. And this is what I did. And suddenly I've amassed a network of sources within New Zealand and around the world, where it doesn't matter what area of debate is being had or what location it might be in, invariably I'll actually have a source already on the ground there who's capable of commenting on it and doing a little bit of digging in their particular time. And this is how you you kind of use what you got, where you are, in whatever way you can. And what I want to do, and what I think more media should be doing, is finding those people that nobody knows and bringing out their stories, so that you get such a massive, wide overview, both from known and knowns and unknown unknowns, so you know what the hell is going on in any particular situation and how to defeat it. That's what the media should really be doing. It's called the fourth estate. You know, it's like you're part of the government if you're part of the media. And the government's job, allegedly, is to protect people from having force and fraud perpetrated upon them by any individual, be they powerful, be they weak, be they scumbaggery, be they benevolent. That's the job description. And if you ain't doing it, you're destroying your country. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's both fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb on behalf of our Prime Minister John Key from the Federal Reserve Bank, where he worked in New York and Wall Street for 2 years in charge of the European bond and derivatives trading. Welcome back, everybody. I've got this knot in my stomach right now, Chris, because I fear corruption, both of myself and those around me. And I feel that the more influence you have, it actually results in giving you more power in a sense. Like having a radio show, for example, that's power. I can bring somebody on and maybe help them in their daily life. I've got the power to do that. I've got the power to expose with several pairs of ears listening. So I wonder, how much power does one really want that's healthy? And how much of it do you want that's absolutely necessary to just get your job done, you know? Like if you ain't got the power to drive a car or whatever because you simply don't possess the skills, you got to learn how, okay? You give yourself that, take the responsibility of learning, and then you get given the power to drive, huh? And it's the same thing.
Yeah. I think that's a healthy question to ask. I guess my response to that is, with a platform, I guess, comes an element of power, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. With that comes social responsibility, to the public. I think what we do and what all of us do that are, in this thing or in the podcasting environment or the YouTube environment or whatnot or the radio, new media TV environment is we have a responsibility to empower the public with information and not take that for granted because it's a responsibility.
Mm. You know what they all say about power? Is the old Lord Acton quote. The third sentence in the quote is often forgotten about, but power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and all great men are inherently evil. And I was just thinking about this. I consider myself to be a great man. I've got a very high opinion of myself. That's why I'm able to do all this stuff that I do, because I believe in myself and it gives me the energy and the strength of purpose to actually go out there and be insulted and have people tell me that I should go get a job and that I should shut the frack up and that they're going to kill me and all of that kind of stuff. You think I'd be able to do all that if I hated myself? No. but the inherent difficulty is, will I, at some point, possibly be corrupted and turn into some form of douchebag? I think it's possible, Chris. I think when you get too full of yourself, you get too far ahead of yourself, and you wind up forgetting the people who helped you get where you are, and hanging out with this other crowd and stuff like that, who basically don't care about you, and they're just out to use you.
Yeah,
and I figured it like this. It's about loyalty, Chris. Loyalty and honor. That is what I think media should truly be about, or at least that's what I'm trying to be, because those in service to humanity who are willing to give everything for other people, essentially, if they ever become corrupt, it's because the other people let them. And I think everybody should be suspicious of me. And if I ever break my loyalties or start to exhibit some type of behavior pattern that connotes scumbaggery, I would hope and pray that my friends and colleagues would either, A1, pull me up on it, and if I'm past the point of being reasoned with, they would expose me and remove me from my position of power before I could do any more damage.
Yeah, well, what you're saying is incredibly honest. And I think it's the nature, especially of our audience and the type of people that, tune in to our shows that are truth seekers, et cetera. Yeah, they're constantly questioning everything, everyone, including, the personalities or the people that are giving them the information. So people naturally, and I think it's a good thing, they're going to question Vinny Eastwood, they're going to question me, as they should. Yeah, I think that's why it's important, too. I mean, you're talking about power and kind of the power. We talked about the social responsibility that comes along with what we're doing. you know, I think that's why it's very important that you know who you are.
Hold on, Chris. I think it's actually the upside down day round. The only reason why we've got this power is because we took social responsibility.
Well, I would agree with that. I guess what I was trying to get at is, and you alluded to this, you know, just with confidence and stuff, is you have to have a confidence within yourself. You have to know what you stand for. And, you know, you can't forget those principles, you know, as you grow. And, you know, hopefully you can always maintain a healthy perspective, no matter, you know, how popular you are. I don't think any of us got into the, you know, if we were really concerned about power and popularity, I'd be dedicating all of my time to pop culture. I mean, 27,000 subscribers, that's nothing. If we did pop culture, it'd have millions. I mean, I don't think any of us really got into it for fame or anything like that. It's because we care genuinely about the issues and we're passionate about what we talk about. It's the only reason I do it. You know, and hopefully we continue to reach a larger and larger audience. But it's certainly not for fame or fortune. You know, Stefan Molyneux, who I know you've interviewed, you know, you interview quite frequently. I had him on the show a few times. He told me, he's like, hey, Christopher, you know, do you do this full time? I'm like, yeah, you know, I've been doing this full time for, you know, I guess going on almost 3 years now. And he's like, you know, he's like, that's awesome. He said, you know, it's not the easiest life path to choose, but you'll find it's the most rewarding. And I don't know, I think it's really cool hearing from others that are in the, I guess, in this path with us, or, you know, have more experience than us too. You know, tell us that, because, you know, I do find that, though. From my work, and I'm sure you'd say the same thing, Vinny, it's incredibly personally rewarding. And we put up with a lot of shit. I mean, we really do. I mean, you're just touching the surface on half of it. I mean, people say horrible, hideous things about us. I mean, we get death threats. Sometimes I feel like we got targets on our back. You know, it's scary at times. But what keeps us? Why do we keep doing it? Or why do I keep doing it? Because I've got a passion for it. I believe in what I'm doing. I believe in what people like us are doing, Vinny. And I do think it's a worthwhile life path. I don't know if it's a choice. I always kind of felt like it chose me, not the other way around.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think either of us could ever go back to work for somebody else, knowing what we know now, and having done what we've done. We've kind of gotten to the point where we realize, hey, I am a boss. I'm not an employee, but I'm not the boss of other people. I'm the boss of myself. And I can get more out of my employee. I can give him nice holidays when he needs it, and that kind of thing. I can be attentive, and I can milk his creativity. That sort of thing. That's what I treat myself as. Is kind of like a benevolent boss of myself, trying to take care of myself. And every time I've gone for a job interview, I near on have a panic attack because I don't want to work it for scum.
Well, I mean,
No. Actually, here's the thing. Back in high school, right? I've virtually no decent friends or whatever. Okay, it was just like the whole school was a bunch of idiots, and I was the one who was cool, and I didn't realize it until I got out and started thinking for myself and doing things for myself and supporting myself, and I realized I didn't need any of these other fair weather friends and everything like that. I was actually all good on my own. And as I found out that I was all good on my own, suddenly a whole bunch of other people who were all good on their own too wanted to meet and talk and collaborate and build and make things frickin' happen. And we're having conversations that mean something, right? And I never want to go back to working with douchebags who I don't give a frack about, or vice versa.
Yeah, I hate, you know, I always hate it. It's, you know, some people, maybe it's okay for them, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I always personally hate it. I did not like the corporate environment. I never did. It's just not my makeup, you know. It's just not who I am or what I'd want to do with my life, and nothing against it, you know. Some people, that might be their choice and what works for them, but yeah, it's kind of one of those things. There's really no going back. I mean, it'd be kind of fun or fun and funny just to see some of the background checks on people like me and you. You know, these companies do such extensive ones. It's like, who are these people? Well, I mean, they're going to have a 1,000-page dossier and about, you know, 2,000 videos to sift through, and I don't even think they could do proper research on it.
Well, you see, it's like when you do something new every day, you don't have time to sit back and look at your accomplishments but once in a while. And if you've always got a huge pile of accomplishments and good things being done in your wake, mate, you're never worried about the past, and you're always concerned with the present, and you always positively affect the future. Chris, thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, thanks, Vinny. Always a pleasure, man. Well, I was just going to say before we close out, yeah, as long as the message is growing and we continue to see that growth, we know that everybody, and we're all in this together with our audience, we're all doing a great job. And honestly, we should thank our audience more and, you know, thank those that get our message out, but it's not our message, it's the message. And, you know, we couldn't do it without all these great people. So my thanks goes to everybody for that.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Everything that I'm wearing right now, literally, everything that I'm touching right now to this desk, these studio lights, this computer, this microphone, the hard drives, the cell phone, the megaphone behind me, all the things on the banners and stuff on the walls, all of it was given to me by somebody like you listening or watching this right now, okay? It's such a great point, because it means that without the support from all the listeners and everything, my walls would be bare, I would be naked, and I would not have a show. That's how we all are, really. We need each other massively. I need you just as much as you might need me.
And aren't we all naked without each other?
That's right. Stand together. Yeah. Cover up your private parts. We'll be right back. Show broadcasting live right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. There's a lot of staticky, nasty business going on in the background. My guest, David Slomer from Rockin' Films, has arrived. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny, how are you doing? Hope my connection's coming through okay.
It's coming through absolutely awfully. I believe we're kind of going to need to connect you on phone, I suppose, if you could... pop your phone number just into the Skype chat here. We'll get you reconnected that way. And we were having a conversation last night about how you kind of came to know of me in this show, and what happened to occur to me is that I'm just kind of really straight up, and I kind of like to get along with people, and it's more like just about having fun and sort of taking a holiday from the seriousness of the situation while still taking it rather seriously. And it's the combination of the two that actually appears to balance the equation in a way. It's kind of like fructose. If you know anything about high fructose corn syrup or anything like that, the reason why it's so bad for you is because it's got no fiber with it. Fiber breaks down fructose and it allows your body to process it properly. It packages a poison with the cure. That's how it happens in nature. I try to kind of model the show sort of on that basis to try and keep people happy. Well, actually, just to keep myself happy and amused, really. Because I think, well, if you don't spend your life trying to amuse yourself, then you won't spend your life being amused. Okay? And if there's nothing funny, then make up something funny, for goodness sake. What do you got to lose? Seriously. I don't get why people want to be angry, why people want to be upset, why people want to do things that stresses them out. I don't want to do any of that, man. That's not how I run my life. My life is supposed to be stress-free and happy and with a few cackles in there somewhere and also productive. You know, you got to make all those choices in your life. If those aren't your priorities, then you've got to wonder, what are your priorities? If that's not the case. My very special guest, David Slimer, is now back on the air. David, welcome back.
Hey, Vinny, good to talk to you again. Hopefully this is a little bit of better connection. I guess someone doesn't want us to talk. Maybe Bill Gates, who's recording all the Skype calls now, doesn't want us to talk. I don't know. But anyway, hi, Bill Gates. Hi, Vinny. Hi, listeners.
Hi, David. Now, David, would you give us out your website and just give a bit of a preface for the listeners about what you do? I mean, you're an author, you're a filmmaker, you philosophize, you have a great time, you've done a number of appearances on all over the web, that kind of thing. But people would probably want to know why and what you talk about.
Sure, Vinny. I'm a writer and a filmmaker. I'm based out of Toronto, Canada, and I guess, as your previous guest has said, I'm kind of one of those people who never really fit the mold either, you know, that was presented for me in life. So I've always been seeking and looking for alternatives that fit me better. And basically, I wrote this book called Deaths on 2012. It's a fictional story, but it does have a lot of truth in it as to what's really going on now in terms of the cosmos and planetary alignments in 2012. And I make films as well, and a variety of subjects, documentaries and different things. And so my website's my main website for my blog. My writing is davidsloma.com. So that's David and then SLOMA.com, one word, davidsloma.com. And then my film site's rockinfilms.com, no G in it, rockinfilms.com. And they can find all of the stuff about me there, and got quite a few videos on YouTube, and try to do my art the best that I can and make the world a better place as I go along. So that's kind of me in a nutshell there, Vinny.
Well, today we have a little under an hour for you to do as much positive things that really matter and change the world as you see fit. So what would you like to talk about first?
Wow, that's quite a broad canvas to work with. I guess what really strikes me is the majority of people, it seems, that I encounter, maybe I'm not in the right groups, but the ones I encounter and I sort of point things out to that I see that are going on in the world that you know should be questioned or changed, they either ignore it or they just willfully put it to the side, like it's too much trouble or something, you know? Like it doesn't concern them, and that really baffles me. Because as far as I know, we're all on this planet together, and whatever affects one of us affects all of us. So it's kind of strange. People just want to kind of compartmentalize things. You know, they just want to go to their jobs and do their lives and whatever they do, and you know, the heck with everything else. And that's a very odd attitude to me. Maybe I'm a kind of person that's you know, too interested in what goes on, but I just think it's being a responsible human to be interested in what's going on in the world around you. I mean, this is my home, this is where I live, and you know, if things are being done to the environment and the economies and political systems in the world, it's going to affect me and all of us. So I think it's very healthy to be interested, but I understand it can be overwhelming, so maybe that's why people refuse to look or put their heads in the sand, you know?
Well, I think what is it to be overwhelmed is to have something that you don't think you can handle, right? Something that, that threatens to destroy you in some fashion. I think that maybe when destroyed in a way, that's when so much reconstruction and improvement happens. It's kind of like if you break off a piece of yourself, the piece that grows back becomes bigger and better than it was before.
Yeah, it can. It could be mutated. I have a cactus plant which started to rot, and the only way to save it was to basically cut the roots off, because the rot was between the roots and the main body of the plant. So I didn't know if I was going to kill the plant, just as an analogy, you know. So I cut the roots off because I learned that if you do that, it will regrow. And so I don't know. Maybe if that's what's going on, if a part is diseased, you know, maybe it needs to be taken, you know, drastic action to change. But I think change is happening no matter what, right? It's inevitable. I think that's the only constant thing in our known universe is change. Like, everything changes, so it's happening. Hopefully, moving towards a better space. But I think a lot of things are improved in the world now than, say, you know, 100 years ago, for example, right? There's a lot of things to do with healthcare for one area that's really made huge advances due to technology and understanding. It's a double-edged sword. I mean, you've got all these negative effects of technology and medicine that are happening now too. I mean, I saw a documentary recently, and I think it was Forks Over Knives, I believe, and they quoted how many people a year that die from prescription drugs that are given to them. You know, bad reactions. I mean, it almost happened to me. I mean, I had a prescription medication years ago, and I had an allergic reaction to it. And luckily, you know, I came through it okay, but it was very close. I could have been gone. And it happens to people every day. So, I don't know. It's the good and the bad together, it seems. Where you go from here?
Everything. In other words, everything's getting better and worse at the same time. And
kind of. Don't you think so?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, life has such an inherent duality that you need to be a little bit evil and very, very good, or a little bit good and very, very evil in order to actually exist. Like, nobody's pure evil, nobody's pure good.
Yeah, it's the yin and yang thing. You know, we are in a duality system of duality in this existence, that's for sure. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, it was a Cold War. Right, so Russia and the United States and the atomic bombs, and you know, I used to have worries that, you know, they're going to drop the bombs on us. Okay, now that fear is still there, but now we add to that, you've got, you know, rampant possible diseases, plagues going everywhere, and then now we've got ozone hole problems, and now the economic problems are even worse because the economies of the world are much more integrated now, so what happens to one happens to another a lot more, which you didn't have that so much years ago. There was more separation. So, but then again, it's amazing. I'm talking to you now, and you know, you're in New Zealand. I'm in Canada. You know, we connected via the internet because I heard of your show, because I'm interested in a wide variety of subject matter, and it sort of led me to your show. And so that's amazing. So, I don't know, yeah, it does seem like the good and the bad seem to kind of grow in parallel. It's weird to me. Where's it going to end up? I don't know. Which side's going to win, you know? I mean, I think the light wins. I think the good side wins. I think it's stronger than the bad side. And I hope I'm right. But, I mean, maybe that comes from all my media programming, you know? Since I grew up with a child, the good side winning all the time, you know? I don't know if it always wins, but ultimately, I hope it does. I think it does.
Yeah. Well, I think it comes down to the fact that we don't know, okay? And I personally, the fact that I don't know who's going to win or what might come is actually inherently exciting to me as an opportunist.
Yeah, it's true. If you're a betting man, yeah. I guess that's what makes life exciting ultimately. I mean, if we knew everything that was going to happen, wouldn't it be a lot more dull and boring for us? I think it would be. I mean, even if you go to like a psychic and get a reading, I mean, a lot of people think that's total bunk, but I've gone to some of them and they've said incredible things to me. There's no way they could have known. And I know other people have had these experiences too. Sure, there's a lot of these, you know, I've seen, you know, a lot of them out there are charlatans, but at the core of it, I mean, I think there's something to it. I think there's some good ones. But even they will tell you things that are going to happen in your future, and even they can't say everything, and sometimes they're wrong, or things change. You know, like, what are they seeing? Are they seeing, like, something that's fate that can't be changed? Or are they seeing a possibility that's moving in a certain direction? But if you do different things, you're going to change your future. I mean, these are very interesting, fundamental questions that we have. And I guess that's what keeps things interesting, as you mentioned.
Hey, and look at it this way. If everybody's so obsessed with entertainment in America and in New Zealand, it's much less the same. I mean, you know, it's all the same stuff. If everybody's so hung up about that, they try to live their lives vicariously through imaginary characters instead of simply being the character that they are and going off and getting into your own adventures. And this is something I talked to you about last night, is that I only learned this word vicariously, and I was cognizant of the fact that as a radio show host, because I'm not with you, because I haven't seen the work that you've done for years on end and such, and haven't worked with you on those particular things, that when you come and share these experiences, share this wisdom, I live vicariously through you and all the other guests and things of that nature. But I also do go out and have experiences of my own. I don't isolate myself.
Yeah, and that's important, because what you're getting fed through the media is a very narrow point of view. I grew up, I guess, I could say I was addicted to television when I was a child. I really was. And it's no surprise. I mean, it's a hypnotic medium. I mean, it has effects on your body to put you in a trance state. I mean, it's a fact. And I remember I was young. I was probably like between 7 and 10 years old, and I had it in my mind that when I grow up, I want to drive like a red Ferrari, and I want to smoke Marlboro cigarettes. You know? I mean, doesn't really matter what the brands are. Could be any brands there. But the fact was, that was programmed into my mind at a young age. I was obviously too young to drive or smoke, but I knew that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. So, I mean, those point of view were put into, I think, a lot of our young minds, you know, by watching TV and absorbing mass media. Not to say there's not great things about that happen in mass media. I mean, some of the most incredible films I've seen or books I've read have come out of the mass media. So, it's that yin and yang thing, you know, the double-edged kind of sword. But I think it's important to get a wide variety of experiences and travel and read and, you know, don't just get all your information from one source, which a lot of people do now. You know, come on, flick on the TV, and you know, the TV, the mass media now, I believe they're owned by like 5 companies, something like that. So you're getting a very narrow window on the world, don't you think?
Well, I think when you've got somebody in a prison, it pays not to give them a bay window.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite TV shows was The Prisoner. I'm sure you've probably seen it, you know, Patrick McGowan.
It's funny you should mention that. One of my good friends actually showed me the intro to The Prisoner just last weekend, and I'd never heard of it before, and here you are talking about it.
Fantastic show. I believe it was late 60s it came out, and they only made about 17 episodes. I was quite into it for a while there, and just watched it, and as much, you know, if any episode I could find, I watched it and sent away for additional materials on it, magazines on it, and whatnot. It was fascinating to me, and you know, I guess to leave a prison, you got to realize you're in one, and you know, you don't. There's that also that saying too, like the fish is the last to discover water. You know, and
yeah.
Like, you don't see things when they're right in front of your face sometimes until you. Something happens, something dramatic happens in your life, some crisis, of some scale, you know, spiritual crisis, economic crisis, relationship crisis, something like
that. We now have the crisis of the intervening commercial break. We'll be right back after it, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite, and I can hit a target through a telescope.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Real AM FM affiliates also in New Zealand here. Rush 87.7 in Hamilton and Ifinity FM in the Cargill in the South Ireland, who play the Vinnie Eastwood shows from midnight till 2 a.m. Monday through Friday, real late in the middle of the night when all the conspiracy theorists are still awake. Now, my very special guest, David Slomer, writer, filmmaker, and seeker, according to his own website, there's a little poem that you've written here called Trees and Fall.
Yeah.
The trees, older than me, are changing colours in this fall. They were growing before I was born. I've walked by them so many times, and still they stand there, silent until the wind stirs their leaves, getting ready for another winter's sleep. Their drying and dying leaves, a breathtakingly beautiful canvas that the one paints on, ever-changing. But I wish it could stay like that always, with yellow leaves against the blue sky and hues of red looking so vivid, I can hardly believe they are real. It's nice stuff, man.
Thanks for reading that, Vinny. It's nice to hear you read it all the way from New Zealand there. And you know, I guess you're going into spring, and we're fall here. So it's interesting that the world's so big that you can read about what I'm going through, and you're going through something totally different there weather-wise. It's neat.
Hey, I might make a New Zealand one called Trees in Spring. You know, my mum was a poet. I'm kind of poetical. I could do it.
Cool, man. Yeah, I've put out several books of poetry, and I've gotten big into the e-publishing thing now. So my stuff's all over Amazon and iTunes bookstore and all kinds of places online. And that's a real thing too. To talk about, you know, technology. I mean, I can be here at my computer at home and make something up now and make an ebook and put it online, and there it is for anybody in the world, just like, you know, just like you coming by my website and seeing it. That blows my mind. I love it.
Well, let's talk about something else that'll blow people's mind. Your book, The End of the World is No Party, Death Sun 2012, a novella by David Slomer. And
yeah.
I'll just read out the preface here. It's December 21st, 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, and the night many believe the world will end. Four friends gather in a remote house to party and wait out the end of the world, but they are not alone. Supernatural forces are close by, as the veil between the worlds is thin at this time of universal transformation. The great battle of revelation, of good versus evil, is about to begin.
Yes, dum dum dum. Yeah, I guess that comes out of, you know, maybe a bit of my Catholic upbringing, you know, with the fire and brimstone and all that. There's a lot of theories, you know, what's going to happen in a very short amount of time here, December 21st. I mean, factually, there are things going on in the sky, planetary alignments, and moving into the center of our universe in a lot of ways. And so that's happening. Real things are going on there. But, you know, you got all these disaster movies coming out. I mean, if you ask if I think it's going to be the end of the world, I don't think so. I think things are going to possibly shake up a bit more. Speaking about the Mayans, I have spoken to some real Mayans and actually participated in some of their ceremonies, and they tried to caution us that, you know, no, it's not going to be the end of the world. You know, everyone's coming to them and saying, you know, hey, you know, everything's going to be over. No, they don't even believe that. But it's a time of change. So I took all this kind of information. There's a lot more to it as well, and I put that into this fictional story, kind of your classic horror story where, you know, people are trapped in a house in the woods. And I just set it against the backdrop of what's going on now in reality, which is 2012. And that was a lot of fun. You know, it got a lot of things out of my system to write that, and I could point people to a lot of things I liked, and including your show and a lot of other researchers, and so that was great. But the thing is, when you write a book with an end date like that, no, people are probably not going to want to read it after December 21st this year, because either we won't be here, or they already know what's going to happen. So just a little tip for the writers out there. Don't write books with a strict end date on it. I think I learned my lesson on that one.
Well, I don't know, because let's take the movie 2012, for instance. I can guarantee you, it was a great, in my opinion, it was a pretty awesome movie. And I'll probably still watch it long after 2012 has come and gone. So what matters is how good it is, whether it stands the test of time, regardless of the date. Like, have you ever seen the movie Demolition Man? Sylvester Stallone?
Oh, I think I probably tried to watch a few minutes of it, yeah.
I thought that was a great film, you know, like, dude gets frozen, he wakes up in a future where everybody's a real pushover and really weak-minded and pathetic and all microchipped and they get fined for swearing and sex is illegal and all of this sort of stuff. Look, it's a great film.
Oh,
and
okay. Sounds good. Maybe I should give it another try, yeah.
But the funny thing is, the helicopter comes, this is the opening shot, helicopter comes in over Los Angeles and the Hollywood sign is on fire and it says Los Angeles, 1996.
Wow. Well, you know what? That's true. Maybe the thing with the dates is not really, you know, anything to worry about, because, like, some of my favorite films are set in times that have already transpired already, you know, like Escape from New York, for example. You know, the great John Carpenter film. I think the date was 1984, I believe, in the film. Something like that. It was in the 80s, anyway. And you look at the film now, and obviously it's dated in the technology, not just the date they put on the screen. But, I mean, that's a fantastic film, too. I mean, you know, New York has become a maximum security prison. You know, that's incredible. And, you know,
and
Mad Max. I like dystopia movies. You know, Mad Max, Blade Runner, all this kind of thing. So I've always been drawn to that, and I don't know why. I mean, they're fantastic films.
Me too.
Primarily, it's not so much the, you know, I'm looking to subscribe to the philosophy, but they're well made pieces of art, you know, and that's what I try to do too. I don't try to just say, hey, you know, you should just look at my stuff, and I just wrote it because of 2012. Not at all. I mean, that's a component of the story, but it's part of the story, and the story wouldn't work the same without it. So I like it when things are a natural fit, then I think they're great. And, yeah, maybe the date's not, you know, the key thing, but it certainly adds to the tension, and it drives the plot in a lot of these movies that we're talking about right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you take Terminator, for example, set in 1984 again. It's still a classic film. And what I found is it's like Alfred Hitchcock had a term called a MacGuffin. A MacGuffin is basically, it could be anything. It could be a Maltese falcon. It could be a motel on the side of the road. It could be birds. It could be anything, okay? It's actually irrelevant what the backdrop of the story is. What the story is always supposed to be about is about the characters within that environment, and nothing more. The environment is inconsequential. It's about the character.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. The MacGuffin, exactly. Yeah, that's a good device to use. But ultimately, yeah, it comes down to the characters. I think anyone that knows anything about story will tell you that, and that's true. So that's what I do when I write. I let the characters lead me. I mean, it's one thing to try to have an idea of a plot, but, you know, try to enforce that to the detriment of anything is not going to make a good story. You just kind of write, and it's a much discovery for the writer as a reader, because you find out things as you go along. And Yeah, you know, sometimes the best stories are like that. Most of the time, actually, that you don't know what's going to happen when you're writing it. So it's rewarding for the writer in itself. You know, that's when you say, well, you know, making it's its own reward. Well, that's in a sense it is, for sure. You know, I mean, it'd be great to that other people will like it as well, and you make it the best you can so that they will, and you hope you can make some money and make a living on it too, and that's great. But ultimately, I think the true artist will tell you, and anyone who's got a vocation for something, if you don't do it, you don't really feel comfortable in your own skin. You know, your life is not really fulfilled. I heard a quote from Aphex Twin, you know, a musician, and someone asked him, what scares you? And his answer was, my mind, if I don't do music. So there you go. Just throw that one out there.
Well, I find if you don't, it's kind of like tears. If you hold them back your whole life, it's kind of like settling acid in your stomach, and it gradually eats away at you. But if you learn how to cry, or learn how to laugh so hard that you cry, you get it out of you. Otherwise, it sits there and festers, and it weighs you down.
Exactly. I'm sure you found that in your own work. You know, you encountered all these things that were, you know, made your blood boil, right? And then if you could actually take some kind of action to do something in a positive way, I'm sure it gave you a lot of, you know, psychological relief, you know, and it gives you a driving force in your life. I think people need that, you know. Like, I don't believe in retirement. You know, people reach a certain age and then, okay, you're done, here's your gold watch and your pension check and pat you on the head and go home and, you know, sit down and watch TV the rest of your life. I don't believe in that. I think, you know, you need something to get up for in the morning. You need a driving force behind you, you know, a goal. You need goals. You need things to do. And your life is so much better. And you wake up in the morning like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to do that thing that I really like to do. You know, I think that's a problem. We're kind of like forced to do things we don't want to do. You know, and I think we all suffer for it. So,
yeah. Well, the thing is, we suffer through stuff regardless, and if you can't get it out, I mean, it's not about kind of feel as self pity or anything like that. It's just feeling the stuff that's really, really horrible, and not wanting that feeling inside you. So you let it out, but you don't ignore it. If the problem keeps persisting, you actually go out and do something about it. You know, be proactive rather than depressive. I mean, and get angry about it if necessary. I mean, if that's what it takes to motivate you, sure, fine, get angry. I mean, my opinion is that anger is simply depression that also has motivation within it. You know. And we've got a caller on the line here. We'll go to him now. Chris, in Florida, you're on the air, man.
Hello?
Yep.
Hey, Chris.
Hey. Can you hear me?
Yeah, what's on your mind, man?
Oh, hey, Vinny. I was just listening in and enjoying the conversation. I was just wondering when it comes to, because I'm a frustrated author, and what I realized was the best teacher I ever had when I was younger in school taught us allegory, and when I'm teaching younger people, or you know, I go online and I see like a breakdown of the Lord of the Flies and how they have like Spark Notes nowadays, and I see all these kids watching, you know, the Spark Notes on YouTube and stuff, and they don't understand the joys of reading. They don't understand the allegory. They don't understand metaphor. And I saw this awesome breakdown that this teacher did explaining, and it reminded me of this teacher that I had that I always remembered, and how she broke down. And I think it's because it's so important, because so many stories are told in a subtext, you know, with the, you know, the main story, the and then the underlying story. And how people don't really understand those devices and how they're used. And a lot of it in the Bible is the same way. You know, people take that surface story, and there's this whole other story being told. And I was just wondering if you guys could kind of speak to that.
Yeah, that's definitely there in many stories. I'm actually you know, sitting here looking at this poster from the Lord of the Rings film, and I grew up reading that book, and to me that was, I guess, one of the books that saved my life, I could say, just the flights of imagination and the wonderful use of language and the characters. It was an incredible thing. And then they made a film about it, you know, quite a bit later, and I saw that as well, and that was pretty interesting. And then people have come up with, you know, the theory that the Lord of the Rings was really, you know, it was really an allegorical story, and it stood for something else. Maybe it stood for, you know, the battle against the Nazis and things like this, or they transpose it somewhere else. And I agree, a lot of stories have allegories. I, you know, but then again, sometimes they don't, and people want to put, you know, the sort of allegory on top of it. But I know what you're saying about the, especially with the Bible there, you know, you can read it many different ways, and it's so rich, and those are really incredible stories, and they're certainly richer if you can do that. If you have a story, you can put multiple layers in. Yeah, that's the best way. But absolutely. I think you need to be true. You need to be true to the story. You know, true to the art. Like it, you know, if it's there, fine. But you know, if you force it, then it's not gonna gel.
Yeah, it'll kind of take different turns and twists and things like that. Things that you can't really plan. And sometimes it's good to actually just sit there and just write out every single one of your thoughts, and then you'll find out that you can actually piece something together from all of these different thoughts you've got if you go over it one more time, you know? So revisit, rework, and you'll come away with a result. Be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the final segment today. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It really is, because when you're having a conversation with somebody who really gets you and you get them, time seems to disappear. We've got Chris in Florida still on the line there. Chris, did you have a final word or comment or question for David Sloman, my guest?
Sure. Just one more thing. What book it maybe inspired you, or was you know, one of your favorites, or that stood out, or that you would consider maybe an essential read? And you know, that question could be for both you guys. And I'll enjoy the rest of the show off air. Thanks a lot.
Well, I think if you haven't read books like Lord of the Rings again, or 1984, Brave New World, you're really missing out. So those are three I would just quickly off the top of my head mention.
And me, I'm not a reader in general. I mean, favorite book that I ever read was actually, incidentally, Jurassic Park. I read that when I was, I think I was 12, and I read it within 6 hours at school one day. I just ignored all the classwork and everything like that and just kept reading this book, and it was really fascinating, all the stuff about the Cray supercomputers and genetic engineering. And what it showed me is how much extra information and how much really interesting things get cut from feature film versions of books.
Oh, all the time, Vinny. I just finished reading the novel of Dune by Frank Herbert, and you know, looking at the film that was made of it, particularly the David Lynch film, you know, there's a lot of problems with that. It's a huge book; it's over 500 pages. He was asked to put it into a 2-hour cut. I think his first edit was about 4 hours. So, I mean, there's no way, you know, all the richness of the book could get through. That's another incredible book. If you haven't actually gone and read Dune. And you mentioned Jurassic Park there, written by Michael Crichton, one of my favorite authors, and he's one of those authors I just can't put down. I read a book of his called Pirate Latitudes recently, and that was published actually after he passed away. It was found sitting on his computer, finished. He was a guy who was very interested in scientific subjects and great many things. Another book of his is really great, Rising Sun. If you haven't read that one, that's incredible. I hope I'm going to read all of his books one of these days. And he also wrote under a pen name, I believe it's called John Lang. So I got to track those down. And he was, of course, he was a director. He did. He wrote the book and directed Andromeda Strain, I believe. Both of those he did. That was an incredible movie. you know, one of the first real, like, paranoia, you know, viruses are going to take over the world, you know, kill everyone movies. So that's a great one.
We'll go to our next caller now. Tim in Wisconsin, you're on the air. Tim, you're on the air, man.
Yeah. First, I just wanted to say I thought the first hour you had with Chris Green was great. And then I just wanted to say that I agree with what you're saying about anger. And the thing I also wanted to say for any all or any listeners out there that didn't see, you know, me see it, you know, that weren't looking in the chat room or didn't see me say it in your social network, is that we can't allow the New World Order to make us angry and stressed out, because as long as there is no stopping what them of the New World Order are planning for all of us, we might as well, you know, just try to make whatever free life we still got be the best that it can be.
Yeah, just chime in my comment here to that. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's about building the life you want, you know, building what you want, instead of just having a reaction to negative things that are going on. It's like, no, what do I want to see in the world and working towards it? I think Vinny's a big proponent of, you know, proactive action.
Yeah, I think it was like, you can look at the chair across to you and you think, man, that chair's not in the right place. I could just get up and move it. It'd take 2 seconds. Or I could travel to India and learn over a period of 60 years how to move that chair with my mind. No. Move the frickin' chair, bro. Quit messing around.
Or I can walk by the chair and you know, complain about it and stub my toe on it repeatedly. You know,
yeah,
there's
exactly.
That option, too.
See a problem, find a solution.
Yeah. Or just stop going into that.
People get into the mode of actively and consistently describing the problem and never attempting to come up with a solution for the problems of their own life.
Yeah, or just, you know, totally ignoring it and not even thinking there can be a solution, right? Just, you know, not even going into that room with the chair anymore, using another room in the house. So, yeah, it's wacky.
Yeah. Well, I found that you kind of just need to, it's sort of like diet, you know, your life, your social consequence and things like that. And Tim, I thank you for your call.
Yeah.
Is that basically it's like you're over-toxified, whether you're toxified by people, crappy information, or a job that with people who don't appreciate you that basically make you feel bad about yourself. You know, it's about getting the toxins out of your system and replacing them instead with good things, I find. And that's the best way to do it. And it's a step-by-step process. It's not just a suddenly cut off from one thing and then here you are. You've got to build yourself into the person you want to be by surrounding yourself with the materials you want to construct that person from.
Absolutely. It is a process. It's a long-stage process. You know, from stopping, you know, putting the toxins into your mind with your thoughts and your beliefs to your body. Because, you know, what you're going to put in your body is going to affect your brain, it's going to affect your thoughts. So I think there's a huge need for a cleansing of, you know, your whole person, basically. Because I've done things with naturopaths and had, you know, cleansing programs I've gone on, and you gain a lot of mental clarity and a lot of peace. Your body functions better. You can think better. And, you know, so if you're aware of, you're choosing carefully what you put into your mind and your body, it makes a huge difference. I can tell you, I've felt it myself in my life.
Well, final words here. We've got a couple of minutes left. So as a writer and a filmmaker and a poet and somebody who's basically now doing your own thing, I mean, I think Chris from Florida, I wanted to kind of redress that issue about, you know, what kind of little tips would you give to people who want to be a filmmaker or want to be a author or want to be a poet or whatever? I mean, does it just come naturally to you, or is it just real work and taking action involved here?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is taking action with it. I think that if you're given these talents in life, I think it's your responsibility to develop them the best you can, and hopefully they will help other people through that. People ask me, you know, oh, should I go to film school and do that? I mean, I did go to film school. It was a shorter program. In retrospect, you know, if I was to do it again, I'd go to a longer program so I had time to develop. But it takes so much time and money and energy to do that. These days, I think you'd be better off just buying the equipment and doing it. The real way you learn these things is by doing them. Yes, you know, read some books on them, get some instruction, but, you know, don't get caught in the trap that that's the only way you could do these things if someone, you know, is instructing you. I mean, that's, I think, not the way to go for an artist. You know, get the tools and just practice. You learn as you go. Have people look at your work, get some positive feedback on it, and improve. You know, it's a constant improving thing, you know, as you go. Every time you do something, you go, oh, I wish I could do that better. And so next time you do, and then you find something else. I'm sure you've run across this, you know, being a video maker yourself, Vinny. You know, you find things you can improve upon. I'm sure you've learned as you've gone along, you know, you learn your technical skills and what you want to do in terms of, you know, telling your story. So it's just do it. Take action and keep on it. That's my advice.
Yeah. That reminds me of my, incidentally, my New Year's resolution this year for 2012. 2012! Time to stop fracking around.
Exactly. That's right. You know, people are always saying, oh, you know, geez, I don't have time. Time's speeding up. I'm running out of time. I mean, they say that generally, like when you get older, you feel that. But I think it's more than that. You look into the work of people like, you know, Terrence McKenna, right? And, I mean, he was convinced that, you know, time actually was speeding up and that we're heading to something here in 2012. And I think there is actually some scientific basis for that, you know, time has sped up a bit here on the Earth, but it's relative, obviously, where you go in terms of that. But then again, you know, if you're living in the now, who cares, right? It doesn't matter. Yeah. You just be here now. That phrase from the '60s from Ron Doss in his great book, Be Here Now. I mean, that's the kind of best advice you give anybody, right? Be in the moment and you know be alive now. Don't be worrying about the past. And don't be afraid for the future. You know, this is all that exists right now.
Well, you know, it's a good point, you know. Live in the moment. And the moment is this moment. And it's actually continuous. So that moment is stretched all the way out through history. And it's going to continue to stretch all the way on to eternity. So in a way, we get to share that moment with everybody who has ever lived or whoever will. That is an encouraging thought. David Slover, thank you very much for your time, and you have yourself a very fabulous day, evening, whatever the case may be. You can check out his work at davidslomer.com, and the archives will be at americanfreedomradio.com, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, gorillamedia.co.nz, and also youtube.com/MrNewsGorillaMedia. Thank you very much for your attention, ladies and gentlemen, and don't you go changing.